Good afternoon. Thank you for coming back from lunch, and I'd like to thank CSTE for this opportunity to present my work on birth defect surveillance. And I'm supposed to say I have nothing to declare, so. I will be discussing the reporting of birth defects on the revised 2011 Massachusetts Live Birth Certificate as compared to the Massachusetts Birth Defects Monitoring Program. Birth defects affects 1 in 33 live births in the United States. So that's approximately 120,000 infants each year. And it was always kind of hard for me to wrap my brain around that numbers that big, and so I learned a technique of trying to compare it to something. So that is the equivalent of 4,800 kindergarten classes each year, which is a staggering amount. That's each year another 4,800 kindergarten classes. In 2012, birth defects were the leading cause of infant mortality in the U.S. overall, causing 1 in 5 infant deaths, and in Massachusetts, it's the second leading cause for overall and both neonatal and post-neonatal deaths. And birth defects are expensive, with a combined cost of over $200 million in Massachusetts alone for healthcare costs. So birth defect surveillance is really important because the long-term care needs are so much greater for infants with a birth defect than for infants without a defect. Identifying babies with birth defects early on increases the chance that these children will receive the healthcare services that they need in a timely manner for the most optimal outcomes. So knowing the prevalence informs service provision. The causes of about 70% of all birth defects remain unknown. So we do hope that surveillance data will contribute eventually to our understanding of the etiology of some of these defects, which we can then use to help educate public about prevention activities and planning. I used data from the Birth Defects Monitoring Program from 2011 and 12 and the Massachusetts Live Birth Certificate from the same years. So the Birth Defects Monitoring Program identifies major structural defects with or without chromosomal abnormalities and non-chromosomal malformation syndromes, But inborn errors of metabolism are monitored separately through our Universal Newborn Screening Program. Birth defect cases are reported to the BDMP through the birth hospitals, specialty care hospitals like the Mass Eye and Ear Institute, physicians, ER and outpatient clinic records, laboratory and autopsy reports, as well as some vital records. Once these cases are reported, the BDMP then confirms the case through medical record abstraction, and then the records get reviewed and classified. So I'm going to limit my analysis to defects that are considered easily identifiable at birth, and I will discuss more about that in a moment. So for surveillance, the CDC describes 9 attributes that should be included in any evaluation of a surveillance system, and for time today I will be discussing 3 of them: data quality, sensitivity, and predictive value positive. As I mentioned, in 2011, Massachusetts adopted the new U.S. Standard Certificate of Live Birth, which began in 2003, actually, in its electronic form, and this is a screenshot shown here of it. And it has 2 pages to this part. So this is what the birth registrar completes electronically using information supplied by coders or by obtaining the information themselves directly from the medical record. And you can note that there is a checkbox on the bottom for none of the above, which becomes important in this. Okay, sorry. Data quality, the first of those 3 attributes I'll discuss, reflects the completeness and validity of the data recorded. Now, we had some data quality issues, and as I mentioned, 2011 was the first year that Massachusetts began using this. So we anticipated a bit of a learning curve as the birth registrars got used to this new form. We found, though, that one hospital, in fact, had missing information entirely on this section 18 of abnormalities in the newborn, entirely for several months. They just didn't bother to fill it out, not even the none of the above. So that was one of our big data issues. Another issue is that in comparing the birth certificate as a surveillance tool to the BDMP, which is considered our gold standard, there are no There are no minimum criteria for the birth certificate defect reporting. If the physician or any of the attendings considers a defect, it goes into the electronic medical record, whereas the BDMP has very strict criteria, for which, again, I'll discuss in a moment. So because some of the defects, particularly the cardiac defects, even the cyanotic, the critical congenital heart defects, some of those aren't identified until after the infant is discharged. If it's a normal vaginal birth with no other complications, the baby may go home in 48 hours. And even some of these critical congenital heart defects may not show up until the baby was home. So we wanted to limit our initial pass to only the ones that we could expect would be diagnosed in the hospital. So that's why there's a red line crossed through there. And I also excluded at the bottom were birthmarks, because that is such a vague, it could be anything from a little Mongolian spot to anything more serious or a malignancy. So we removing that. The prevalence of any defect in the birth certificate reporting for 2011 was approximately 81 per 10,000 live births. And it's very similar for 2012. However, I wanted to compare apples to apples and not apples to fruit salad, so I had to restrict my subsequent analyses to defects that I considered comparable to the birth defects monitoring program and readily identifiable. So, for example, the BDMP will only consider hypospadias, a male genital birth defect, if it's severe, if it's second or third degree, whereas in a birth certificate it could be first degree. So I ended up excluding that. Renal agenesis is only considered a birth defect in the BDRP if it's bilateral, but it can go on the birth certificate if it's unilateral. Similarly, polydactyly and syndactyly only get in the BDMP if there's involvement of bone and clubfooting requires casting, and those requirements aren't necessary on the birth certificate. So for this analysis, I excluded those. When I did that, the prevalence drops to 44 out of 10,000 live births, and these were, we considered, readily identifiable at birth. And when I compared that to these same defects in the BDMP, it was really close. It was 41 per 10,000 live births, and this is for 2011. 2012, both of those numbers are slightly lower, but they were really similar to each other, and so we might say, great, this is fairly close. Maybe we can stop and just use the birth certificate. Well, guess again. So our second attribute that the CDC has us evaluate is sensitivity. So sensitivity tells us the proportion of all of the true cases of a health-related event that are detected by the surveillance system. So that's driven by our A and C cells. And this is the standard A, B, C, D. So for example, the left-hand side is 2011 and the right-hand side is 2012. And I should comment, the 10,000 infant discrepancy in our total is because when the new birth certificate was rolled out, not every hospital used it as of January 1st, 2011. So I had to limit to only the births that were on that new birth certificate. So almost all of them were on board by March, but that's why it seems like there were so many fewer births. It was not that the birth rate dropped suddenly in 2011. So when I look at 2011 on the left-hand side, we see out of those 60,000 plus infant births, 267 had easily identifiable defects at birth according to the BDMP, but the 249 that were on the birth certificate did not match up completely, and our sensitivity was about 0.57 in 2011. Now, surprisingly also, we figured that there may be a difference between 2011 and 2012, but we predicted that the sensitivity would be lower in 2011 because of this learning curve, not higher. So that was a bit of a surprise to us. Specificity tells us how accurately an infant who doesn't have a defect on the birth certificate is also not in the gold standard BDMP. So that's driven by our D and B cells. And the good news is specificity for both years is really close to perfect. It's above 99%, but that's also not surprising because we have a very large population and a very small number of cases. So it's not as useful in this scenario as sensitivity is. However, individual defects have a wide range of sensitivity, from approximately spina bifida is 25% approximately in both years. So the light blues are the 2011 and the purples are 2012. And again, even though we expected a little bit of a learning curve, they're really quite similar for each year. It goes up to 80% for gastroschisis. But for example, in 2012, there was one case of anencephaly that the BDMP identified. However, five were identified on the birth certificate, which is really quite remarkable. And when we went back and looked, one of those on the birth certificate also indicated that it went home with the mom. That's really unlikely. Anencephaly is a really serious birth defect, and you don't expect the infant to just go home after 48 hours with the mom. But because the one case that was in the birth defects monitoring system was identified in the birth certificate, the sensitivity is 100% in this case, so it's a little bit misleading. An earlier unpublished study that we did in our department back in 2001 using the older birth certificate from 1989 was done on most of these defects that could be compared, showed remarkably similar sensitivity between a decade and a half ago and now, with the exception of trisomy 21, and that has improved almost twofold, and that's likely due to increase in prenatal testing earlier on. The third attribute that we evaluated was predictive value positive, and that's the proportion of the reported cases on the birth certificate that actually have the defect in the BDMP. So that's driven by our B cell. If the PVP is low, it means that the non-cases, the non-true defects, are being erroneously reported on the birth certificate. So they end up in the B cell, that 96, instead of in the D cell, which is our unaffected population. It seems like we did a better job again in 2011 than we did in 2012, and we really can't explain that yet. Again, we see a range of PVP values depending on the specific defect. As I mentioned, that one case of anencephaly that the BDMP identified, and there were five identified on the birth certificate, so including that one. So while the sensitivity is perfect, our positive value predicted is only 20% because we had four erroneously classified on the birth certificate. We started examining hospital, maternal, and infant characteristics in relation to this discrepancy in reporting of birth defects. The level 2 hospitals were the most likely to have discrepant reporting on the birth certificate compared to the values on the BDMP, as well as infants with low birth weight. And this is also consistent with what we found in our earlier study. So we found for data quality, the completeness and validity of the data reporting, it really varied by specific defect and by hospital level. Level 3s, which have our NICUs in them, and we have nine birthing level 3s in Massachusetts and one other at Boston Children's Hospital, they perform the best in terms of identifying the birth defects, which makes intuitive sense. Then the level 1s, the community hospitals, did a really good job. The level 2s fared the worst in terms of accuracy of reporting. Now, as the counts, the ends of the defects are overall low, we can't break down the specific defect by the hospital level. And we can't break down even a specific hospital by any defect because there just aren't enough per case right now. And it takes a couple years to get the data closed in the BDMP. So we hope as the years go on we can evaluate that a little more. For sensitivity, we found a large range from 100% for anencephaly to only 25% for spina bifida. And overall, it was just a little better than 50%. And our predictive value positive fared a bit better. It was nearer to 60%, but we still see great variation by defect. So the BDMP, which is our gold standard, is considered a complete case ascertainment. It also can include prenatal diagnosis. It has a clinical review. So that makes sense. That's why it's our gold standard. However, we expected that the birth certificate should be able to capture these easily identifiable defects to a greater quality than shown here. We also expected that maybe the birth certificate would over-identify these easily identifiable defects because it has such broad criteria. Frankly, it doesn't have any criteria for it. But we didn't expect as many false negatives. We really thought that C cell should be lower because we are restricting our study to the easily identifiable data. However, this could be more an issue of defect less an issue of defect identification and more an issue of defect reporting on the electronic medical record, because the birth registrars can only report what they find in the electronic medical record. And what we've learned is that in our state, and this is probably true for all the states, but in our state, even within the same hospital system, different hospitals are using different EMR systems, even if it's controlled by the same parent organization. And it's inconsistent where the data end up in this electronic medical record. And so our next step is to try to work with our area hospitals, birth centers, and medical schools to explain to them the importance of these data for accurate and timely birth defects monitoring, as well as a host of other things that we use the birth certificate for. Several other studies have shown results similar to ours in terms of limits of birth certificate reporting, but I haven't yet seen much on a root cause analysis of why this is so, and that's something that we're hoping to undertake, and then hopefully a QI to change the reporting habits. In Massachusetts, we're at an early stage of a quality initiative to improve antenatal corticosteroid use on reporting on the birth certificate, and we're hoping that maybe we can apply some of those lessons once learned to this endeavor. But until then, our recommendations would be use the birth certificate only as an additional source to understanding the overall prevalence of birth defects. The BDMP is really the only reliable source for specific birth defects. And what we're also hoping to do is Massachusetts recently initiated a mandatory pulse oximetry testing, and I'd like to look at the reporting of those critical congenital heart defects, the cyanotic defects, to see if the reporting has improved any since the mandatory pulse oximetry testing, because we would hope that the pulse oximetry is like the smoking gun, and sometimes it will then, if that test is positive, the infant is then going to be further screened and while they're in the hospital, which should then lead to higher rates of appropriate identification of critical congenital heart defects. I would like to thank my mentors, Fifi, who's in our room with me, Susan Manning and Emily Liu, and Marlene Andurker, who's the head of the BDMP, and my other colleagues at Massachusetts DPH. References will be on the web in the slides if you'd like, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you. Or you can save them to Liam if you think of any.
Sorry, I'm curious. Your comment about level 2, and you also made a comment about root causes that they have, and like that. Did you have any hypothesis as to why the level 2s were so much worse than the level 1s that are reporting?
No, not yet. No, I don't. But it is consistent with what we found, what others have found earlier in Massachusetts, the level 2s. Have this problem, and also surprisingly, it goes hand in hand. The mid-sized hospitals, which may have a fair volume, but they aren't the level threes, they aren't used to the high risks. But the community hospitals and the very small birthing hospitals seem to have been able to give a lot more attention, either to identifying or to just where they physically put the description of the defect in the medical record. And I don't know which it is yet, but that's something that we're going to look at. So hopefully I'll be able to report on that. Abby?
Do you happen to know the prevalence of infants born with birth defects at the three levels? So like level 1, risk level 2, risk level 3?
I do. Level 3 is definitely higher because, again, those are the infants that are... So if they were diagnosed prenatally, they are going to be directed to the level 3s for greater care.
Okay.
I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I could send them to you.
I don't know. I'm curious. You always wonder, you know, with level 2s, if they're not performing as well, but, you know, how many infants are actually being born there, you know, to make it... I don't want to say a concern, but, you know, to make it worthwhile to dive in a little bit deeper.
It's an excellent point. Yes?
Are there routine educational sessions by vital records provided to these hospitals for completing birth certificates? certificate and so forth and so on?
So I believe when Massachusetts rolled out the 2011 birth, you know, the 2003 birth certificate in 2011, it was also when they didn't want to have to do a paper version and then an electronic version. So they waited until they could get everything online with their VIP system. And at that point, there were people who were trained to go basically train the registrars. But I believe that was more broad-based. This is how you use the electronic birth certificate, not in terms of this particular variable is found here or this particular variable is found there, because some variables on the birth certificate are really, really of high quality. We know that. So I don't think they had additional training on some of these other variables, and that would be something we'd want to look at. Do you have anything to add? Is that okay?
Thank you
very much.